Today, episode 309, back for a second round, I'm talking to Stacy Chadwick in Denver, Colorado, with Liv Sotheby's International Realty. In her first interview on the show, episode 253, How to Launch from Zero to 65 Million, Stacy and I talked about how she first went from homemaker to top dealmaker, the challenges and epiphanies on that path to success, and how she overcame it and made it big. In this episode, Stacy and I talk about how just last year, she not only sold almost 100 million in volume, that's 94 million to be exact, she adds she did it with the most balance, peace, and flow that she has achieved in her personal and business life. Today, she shares how she did that as she and I talk about how to create ongoing clients and growth and balance in luxury real estate. This is the Jerry Metcalf Podcast, where top real estate agents tell how they do it. Powered by Breakthrough Luxury Coaching, this podcast was created for real estate agents across the world to come together and listen in on conversations with the top real estate agents in the United States and around the world, sharing their stories and ideas and what takes our business to the next level. All right, it's the Jerry Metcalf Podcast, where top real estate agents tell how they do it. And everybody, we've got Stacy Chadwick on the call. She is in Denver, Colorado with Sotheby's, or Liv Sotheby's International Realty. Stacy, it is so good to have you on the call and so good to see you. Thank you for coming.
I'm so happy to be here. Thank you for having me.
So this is the first interview. So this is round two, everybody. The first interview we had with you, it was how to launch zero to 65 million in 3 years. So you had just gone, if anybody who hasn't listened to the interview yet, it is a great interview. You get really transparent about kind of being in mom world and some of the tough moments and identifying this is something I really need to do. And then you came in and just killed it. And now you're back on the show and you have just done $94 million last year. Is that right?
It is. Yeah.
I mean, that's amazing. So, and I'll add to you and then we'll let you, I just want everybody to know this woman just did 94 million. And you said that it was the most, it was one of your best or your best year professionally and personally. That's quite right. A feat. Usually those two don't come in the same sentence.
Yeah. You know, when I saw you last, I think I was probably at the tail end of a major growth phase without balance. And so for 2023, my word of the year was balance. It was 2023 was no. Yeah. Wow. 2023 was balance. And so I was really mindful every single day to make sure not only was I satisfying my clients' needs, but my family, my friends, myself. And it helps as you grow that you're able to leverage, right? So with a full-time assistant, part-time marketing director, pretty much full-time combination showing agent, stager, jack of all trades person, you know, I spent more money leveraging, you know, with help on my team. I'm the only agent, but, you know, my support staff, but I gained so much more personal time, ability to travel. And I felt like, you know, the whole time I was still satisfying my clients' needs as I had in the years past. So.
Wow. And it all came, there's a second word, but the first word that comes to my mind, but the first word was balance.
Yeah.
That's where it all came from. My priority is live a balanced life.
Yeah. Yeah. And it came really from a place of imbalance. As much as I was, my growth trajectory was kind of exploding. All I was doing was working, you know, and I wasn't able to spend that quality time with all the people who I was working for. So, you know, starting in 2023, even though it was my biggest production year, it was also my best personal year, which to me, the personal piece is really more important than the production.
Well, isn't that what it's all about, right? Mm-hmm. Like, why are we doing this? I mean, yeah. Maybe some of us are doing this for, but right? Like it's the business is personal.
Yeah. Yeah.
And a word that, so a word that comes to my mind is, or you said it, is leverage.
Yeah.
You said balance. Now, when you said balance, did you know what was coming after the word balance? Did you know I'm about to leverage, or was that a result of prioritizing the balance?
I think they're kind of symbiotic, pretty well connected to each other. I had started leveraging, you know, people will say this, and I think it's true. When you think you need a part-time assistant, you need a full-time assistant. When you think you need a full-time assistant, you need two people. And, you know, we're always afraid because we don't know what's coming next to grow too quickly. But I had started to leverage in 2021, part-time assistant was not enough. 2022, full-time assistant. And then I just, by the end of 22, I just doubled down and I said, okay, you know, this market doesn't seem to be, it slowed down, but it's still really robust. So I'm going to go ahead and invest even more. And I think having the confidence to invest in a bigger way in people helping me definitely helped me grow financially, but then also so that the leverage piece, but also then be able to step away from work and see my friends and my family and go fun places.
You know, when you did that, something that comes to mind, because everybody listening, I have a feeling, or most people are listening, like, yeah, but hiring people is a job.
It is. It's hard. It's hard. I mean, yeah.
No, like it's how many people have hired people, and it's, there's a whole nother frustration or expectations or what do they do and the training and the, you know, I've seen people say, okay, this is what I need. I need to hire this kind of person to get the job done. I need to hire a showing agent, but then the showing agent doesn't show up appropriately. Like there are all these things that just go wrong when we don't set people up for success. But that's the Jerry Metcalf perspective on the whole leveraging thing. But when you leveraged and you did it successfully, what was, two questions, what was most challenging and why did it work? Maybe what was most challenging first?
I think the most challenging piece is when you build your business on your own, it's very hard to let go of the things that you really should let go of. I mean, I'm very detail oriented. I'm a perfectionist in a lot of ways. So, you know, for me to spend time marketing, negotiating, client services, which is where my space should be, for me to let go of the smaller details and hand them to someone, that was very hard for me. But then once we established a trust level, it became easier and easier. And then it was kind of like, oh my gosh, why haven't I done this before? I'll tell you, for me, the success piece and the people that I've hired, they all are agents with their licenses. So I don't work with anyone, including my stager slash showing agent. Obviously, she has a license. I've never hired anyone who isn't licensed and doesn't have experience in the business. I'm looking for someone in my support staff that wants to be in second place. They don't want to become an agent. They really don't want to handle all the 15,000 balls that we have and the stress that we never talk about enough. They really want to be support people. So two things for me are you have to have a license. It's really advantageous if you've been with Sotheby's, because then you either have the Live brand under your belt or at least the Sotheby's mindset. And then you have to really not want to grow into agency, because I don't, for me, want a team of agents. I want people who are working with me to support my vision.
Right. So who is the person that's supporting you supports their goal, which is how many people are looking to work for someone because they want to be an agent? I feel like most of them.
Yeah. It's a hard find, but a lot of the people I work with have actually taken a stab at being an agent and felt like it was just too stressful or too unpredictable. And so they love the world, but they really don't love the, you know, unpredictability.
They're really grateful that you're the one in the role and that you need them. Like it's a real fit. Yeah. And there's a lot of those people too.
Yeah. No. And for me, that's what works. But everyone has a different formula. It just, for me, it's someone who wants to be in a support role, have more regular hours, right? Because we tend to work 24/7. And yeah, it's hard though. It's not easy by any stretch. But if I check those three boxes to start, then I have a better path towards finding the right person to work on my team.
And those three boxes are: they have a license, they have experience in the business, and they're looking for a support role. And there's a fourth one: they're looking for structure.
Absolutely. That's a good
Yeah.
point. Yeah,
That's kind of
absolutely.
ironic though, because structure in real estate, but that's what, here's the question. As an agent who's doing basically 100 million a year, there's a lot of chaos.
There
There was
is.
a developer I was listening to the other day, and somebody said, "How do you have such consistent success?" And he said, "My business is like an emergency room. It never stops, but we always see it through."
Yeah, and if you think about it, if you're in an emergency room and you're in triage, you have nurses and paramedics who have done what they're doing over and over again. So even though every patient looks different, that support, those supporting people are able to jump in and initiate a process. And so that's a big part of what I do. I have a process that is thousands of items long. And every single transaction, whether it's half a million or 5 million, follows the exact same process, right? So then you get those practitioners who get really good at executing. And I think it is the same as an emergency room. Every day looks different, but the process doesn't change. It doesn't.
Well, the irony is people hire you for results, not process, but it is that process. I mean, being now that everybody, Jerry Metcalf has not been real. I've not been selling houses for 2 years. It's kind of cool. It was scary at first, but what I love to hear you say is when you just said, so I have checklists, right? That everybody gets a copy of the buyer checklist, the seller checklist, the closing checklist for the buyer versus seller. And the process, it's like, are you freaking kidding me? And I'm like, nope, because to your point, it's the process is thousands of items long, and a few things back to setting people up for success. Did you find that structured person is going to appreciate that long list that other people don't? And that's where you find the balance of my chaotic world, taking the time to have and create the list that aligns to my business. And then the funny thing is, I think there's a mindset of if I just get the person with the experience, they'll just know what to do.
Yeah, that's
You've got
not
to
the
kind of
truth.
set up for, yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, no, it's so even with a process that's hundreds, thousands of items long, you still have deviations all along the way. But I take great comfort in repetition. And so I find that the people who work with me, having that list of, okay, I've been doing this for years. However, I know, this is what I need to do, and just kind of checking that off. It just makes us more efficient. We can work faster. We can work kind of with more quality and speed at the same time.
Well, I think
So,
was no
yeah.
ahead.
No, go ahead.
Well, what was interesting, I think, about what I love about this, because sometimes we're like, not just there's this whole dynamic of tell the person the goal. There's a lot of stuff out there that says tell the person the goal and then let them figure out how to do it. And I find that just doesn't work because I think that message is misunderstood. Is if they understand what the process is and what it looks like, I've found that when you're leveraging, once they get it done the first time, those steps that are so essential to stop emergencies from happening get left out one by one by one until all of
It
a
can.
sudden every deal turns into a crisis.
Yeah,
And now
it
you're
can.
putting out fires, even though you have an assistant and you don't know why. And some of this, for everybody who loves to read on this book, Horst Schulze has a book called Excellence Wins. And he actually talks about that in the book when you're running operations and leveraging the importance of understanding. You don't want to bog yourself into details, but understanding how a company, how your business, whether it's the Ritz-Carlton or, and this was the Ritz-Carlton Atlanta and his story of the room service was taking 2 hours and nobody could figure out why.
Yeah.
And it all, he had to break down to exactly what's going on, where you break, and then looking at your business, when you've got those kinds of steps, it sounds awfully exhausting, but it sure does avoid a lot of fires that cost you deals and hours for the few hours you put in up front.
Yeah, and I think there's another piece to this, kind of alluding to the four seasons, and that is, probably my team will watch this maybe at some point, so I hope they will agree. I really try to reward everyone I work with at a higher level than the industry does. So I try to pay more, I bonus more, I do random bonuses. We do, team nights out. I'll give them massages. I went to Vegas for G&E last year and brought my assistant back a really nice purse. I'm trying really front of mind, I mean, consciously trying to think, what can I do to make these people want to stay with me? Because they are the reason why I'm able to both produce and go on vacation, you know? So I think the human element, I never lose my temper. Things go wrong. I make mistakes all the time. So why wouldn't the people I work with make mistakes? Just trying to give people a reason to say, yes, this is a chaotic world, but I really like it. I really enjoy being here.
I think something really powerful in what you said is a lot of times there's a mindset of I'm paying you, so you work for me now. And the reality is everybody's a volunteer.
Oh, absolutely. And anyone can go work for anyone. You know, anyone watching this who has had an assistant or is looking, it's not easy. So if you're good at what you do, you know, you probably have options. So I want to make sure that the people on my team don't want to exercise any of those other options, if possible.
When you find, because you've got, like, let's talk about the support of how you've structured yourself to create such a great business. And there's processes and checklists, and then there's just the right people.
Right, right.
But like, what is it, like, walk us through, if you would, what is the whole, like, you know, how many assistants, how many, like, what is it, how many people are, how does it, like, how do you leverage full-time, part-time? Like, walk us through,
well,
like,
how yeah, that, what I that can tell you my formula, like. Because I'm just one agent, right? So I won't ever have a team of agents. I won't have agents under me. Been there, done that in commercial real estate. And I just feel like at this stage in my life, I would prefer to not have a team of agents. So my full-time assistant is full-time salary, bonus per transaction, annual bonus based on production. So a given bonus based on each transaction, a bonus I decide based on kind of some markers that we try to hit through the year. Then my part-time marketing person is about 20 hours a week, hourly, also bonusable by transaction, also year-end bonus. But she basically executes. So I'm a big marketer. So I've always got ideas, just, you know how it is. You can't turn your head off, but she executes everything. So every social media video, every
now,
ad.
Who does this, the part-time?
Then my part-time marketing person.
Okay.
And so I layered her on in 2023. In 2022, I had a full-time assistant. Then I brought in the part-time marketing person. And at the same time, and this is more of an hourly person with an ad hoc bonus that I decide, is my stager, showing agent, jack of all trades person. And, you know, she's mostly hourly, but then I would determine, you know, any kind of bonus ability. So you kind of go, if that makes sense, I kind of have full-time, part-time plus, and then part-time decisions. So they're all a little bit different.
So you've got a full-time support person. Mm-hmm. You've got a part-time person who does marketing as you need it.
Yeah. And then that's about 20 hours. And then the woman who shows and stages for me is probably 20 to 30 hours a week. So probably the equivalent of two full-time people who are capable of executing everything.
Very different talents. That's the benefit of having the different people. You've got someone who's basically your rock, your support system.
Correct.
You've got a second person doing the marketing as you go, who's paid basically as you go, and they're bonusable. And
right.
Then you've got a third person who's like more, you're in the field, available to show, available to stage, all of that good stuff.
Yeah.
And so I guess it's that, like, that one person that's like your rock, that when you leave town, they can take, or if you're not around, you've always got backup.
I've always got backup, and I've got backup to my backup. So if for some reason I'm gone and Lindsay, my assistant, is gone, Beth can easily step in, show for me. I mean, they're all people that I would feel and do feel 100% comfortable stepping into my shoes. And that's huge. It's huge, you know, so that when I'm not available for whatever, I have jury duty tomorrow, if you can believe it. I've lived in Florida over 20
years. Thank you for
years,
being here the day before, because you've got a lot to prepare for. Yeah.
So jury duty tomorrow. So I have showings, I have buyers, and I'm just, you know, executing different people in my shoes because I can't be there. Hopefully one day of jury duty and no more.
This is a good topic, because we haven't even, y'all can listen to the other interview if you want to get to know Stacy. We're going to get to know you too. But everybody asks so much about this, and you, so many people kind of wing it. And I think you've really dialed into, this is actually what it takes and how to do it. A big one is, you know, understanding what you need from these people, which you're clear on, and you've made the checklist. And then I want to talk a little bit more how you made those. But first, you've also got to have the right people. Like when you interview and hire people, how difficult has that been? And how do you know when you've got the right people?
I'll tell you, a lot of it has been referral based. Either someone, you know, I put the word out within Sotheby's, hey, I'm looking for an assistant. And then another agent will say, wow, I just met this amazing woman. I can't absorb her onto my team. Why don't you talk to her? So I've been lucky that a lot of my support people have been referred, right? Or there's someone I know, which cuts out a huge piece of the puzzle. And then truly, I'm very, very, very clear. If you want to be an agent, this is not the job for you. And I think by being that transparent, I really take away the person that might stay with me for a couple of years and then take off and start their own business. And there's nothing wrong with that. It's just not the model I'm looking for. So I'm very transparent and very pointed in kind of what I'm targeting. And I do have my full-time assistant is in the office every day, and I can have flexibility there, but it's really a job that needs to be on site, because if someone has to cover a showing for me, or if someone has to run some marketing materials to a listing, or
they need to be there.
Right, they've got to be there. My marketing person is fluid, not in the office. My showing agent slash stager, fluid, not in the office. So to your point, everyone's plugged in with the right skill set at the right place at the right time. But finding people, it's really been through networking within our own agents or networking in my neighborhood, because I think the most underrated workforce in the world is the former stay-at-home mom who goes back to work. And it's the person who had a career, and this was me, by the way, had a career, chose to stay at home and raise the kids. Kids get older. I'm an empty nester now, and then decided to launch a career again. And the untapped workforce of the former attorney, former consultant, former rock star, you know, person is incredible, right? So my whole team is women. It's pretty much by design. I love men, but I am one of those people who really tries to lift women up. I feel lifted up by my female, you know, friends. So I kind of honor that. And I have, you know, two of my support team are working moms. One is an empty nester. They've all had careers before real estate, have taken time off, have not. I mean, it's a big mix. But I do think that the untapped former stay-at-home mom looking to use her brain in a different way and get back into something is, I look for that person all the time.
And for any moms out there, right? Yeah. But if you look for that person because
I'm that person.
Yeah.
Because I had a big career and then we started having kids. And I talked about this a little bit more in our first interview. And then I took 15 years off to raise the kids because I was traveling. My husband was traveling. We had a nanny raising the kids. It was chaos. And then as they got older, I got back into the workforce. So I'm kind of looking for someone who's had my trajectory, but not always. My full-time assistant has always worked, has a child, is working with a child. So it doesn't have to be a cookie cutter thing, but I do have, you know, certain things that I think work with my style, basically.
When you look at, like, you know, love those people who say everything's easy. Oh, I was just blessed. No, you weren't. Like, what's that? Not you, but like, what has been the most, when you look at leveraging, or maybe it just may be in real estate in general, but when you like, what has been the most challenging thing for you? And it may be about business or about really leveraging yourself or creating that balance, whatever comes to mind.
Like between my personal and like leveraging in order to create balance?
What I really want to know is what's the most challenging thing about getting the right team together to appropriately leverage your business?
Good question. I think the most challenging thing, because I talk to a lot of other fellow agents, you know, who have an assistant or looking for another assistant, we're always networking with each other. It's figuring out the recipe, right? Mm-hmm. So the recipe for each individual person is different. someone else with my production, let's say, so my average price point is 2 million. That means I do less transactions, right, for 94 million than someone whose average price point is a half a million. That person is going to need a lot more support to do all those deals. So I feel like you have to figure out the recipe first. Like, what's your average, you know, what are you,
It's a
it's,
different a $500,000 deal is a different support in the same market. A $500,000 deal and a $2 million deal require different amounts of support too.
well, not only that, but if you're going to go to 90 something million, you have to do four times the transactions. So you in that market would need more support than I have, right? Because you have more volume, more sides. So,
Yeah.
or maybe the same volume, but
Well,
more
it
sides.
depends on the support, right? You've got companies where they're just, it's all paperwork, and other
Yeah.
companies where you've got a stage or a photo shoot, you're at every showing, you've got a phone call to be made to give feedback on every showing that you might not on different with different agents and different sources.
Yeah, but
But you're so high touch. Yeah.
there's and I'm super high touch, and yet it's kind of training yourself to trust the people who you think are amazing to be amazing, you know, and let them interact with your clients as well, because all my clients love everyone I work with, but to give that, you know, touch to somebody else, it's not easy. I mean, it takes time and there's a lot of starts and stops. But yeah, I think you have to figure out the formula, and then you have to know what works for you. I'm driven towards very positive, very high energy people. So I look for those people to be in my universe, because then we're speaking the same language. And I think if we're speaking the same language, we have a better chance of being successful together. You know, some people would say, and as a coach, you might say, well, but if you're more introverted, maybe you want someone who's a little more extroverted. So I don't think that there's one right answer. But for me, it's people who kind of are very like-minded, similar, positive, I think pretty high energy personalities. And then, yeah, have experience in the business and want to maintain a support role, at least so
Yeah.
far, you know,
Well,
this.
what was so funny about what you said, I remember some of the worst advice I ever got was when you hire somebody, it doesn't matter. Don't hire people based on, like, it's okay if you don't like them. Don't hire them based on how much you like them. Well, like, maybe that was good advice, but I would say don't throw out liking them. Like, don't throw the baby out with the bathwater, because to work with someone you don't like every day, it's going to be difficult, and it probably has something to do, back to what you're saying, is the communication is probably really tough.
Yeah, I think that's a good point. I mean, I don't set great boundaries for my communication with my clients. So if I'm up at 5:30, I'll answer a text. I won't get on the phone, but I will text. You know, I am just back and forth. And generally speaking, the people on my team are the same type of communicators. You know, we're bouncing ideas off each other via text as I'm showing a house. You know, it's for me, what works is a lot of similar thought processes and communication styles, for sure. And I don't want to work with someone I don't like. I don't want to work with someone who doesn't like me. You know,
Right.
I don't know how that is sustainable.
Exactly. I'm sure the message was just make sure they're good at the job. But if you don't like them, it makes the rest of it really tough to do.
Yeah.
Now, when you look at talking about being high touch with your clients is so important, especially in a luxury market. There are things you need to let go of, as you said. How did you decide and know what to let go of?
I think, you know, it gets back to understanding where my time is most valuable for my clients, right? And that would be those high producing, you know, calls, conversations, negotiating, marketing, strategizing with or around with an agent on the other side who's a good agent, strategizing around an agent on the other side who might be a roadblock. So I think you just learn with time. My highest and best use is not delivering marketing materials. It's not running a mailbox key to the closing table. There's a million things like that that I once did in my career. But if I'm really leveraging, then I'm working with my team to do the things that aren't so specific to me impacting my clients. And then I am owning those high value tasks and really not giving those up unless, you know, I'm stepping away to be on, you know, with my daughter at graduation or jury duty. And then having the people that you trust to step into your shoes and who your clients love. I mean, it's a system that works for me at least.
Yeah. And I'm guessing here, but just from my personal experience is a lot of it comes down to having relationships with people the same way we do with our clients, or of that trust and synergy and connection, having the same thing with the people who work for you.
Yeah. And I would say something too. I mean, I'm a big texter because texting is so convenient, but not enough agents pick up the phone anymore. And so, you know, and I don't know, I mean, I think we evolved into that world a little bit because texting is so expeditious and convenient, but I pick up the phone all the time. I always answer my phone, even if it says spam. I know that if it's spam, I can get off really quickly, but I will get inbound real cold calls from people who want to work with me, and they'll be labeled spam. So I always pick up the phone.
Wow.
And if it's someone who's not the person I want to talk to, I get off really quickly, and I will have agents. I will have, you know, buyers and sellers who are not my clients and don't know me. They will say, thank you for picking up the phone. And that blows my mind in this industry that I think not enough people. And so to me, anytime I can get on the phone with another agent, a client, someone who's a critical piece of a transaction, that's time well spent. That's where I should be spending my time. If I'm just shooting an update, hey, you know, we got a loan availability approval, clear to close. Okay, I can text that. That's not a big deal. But if I'm going to problem solve, tell someone good news, tell someone bad news, I am absolutely picking up the phone and I'm answering inbound calls all the time.
I mean, that it's funny because it's like there are money making moments in our business, and those are money making moments.
Yeah.
The ones where you're knowing the times to actually be talking to people and doing it.
And I get comments, and I'm not saying this, I don't want this to come across the wrong way, but it's a good thing. I will often get comments from my clients and they'll say, I feel like I'm your only client. And yet they are interacting with my team. They are interacting with my transaction coordinator, my assistant, you know, my marketing director is sending them feedback on all the marketing efforts. Like they're interacting with everyone, but they still get me. Right. And they get me at the times.
They get the better you and more of you.
Yeah. And they get me at the times that they should be talking to me. And so I think that's one of the values of leveraging the right way. My clients feel so well taken care of, and they know that I'm available at the drop of a hat, and I'm always communicating information to them, you know, often by phone. So
I think you just said something like, they know I'm available at the drop of a hat because you're leveraged.
Yeah. Yeah. So I can be available if on the turn of a dime, because if something goes sideways, and they always do, right? And there's a 911 with a deal, I will be there, you know, because to your point, I have people to backfill if something goes sideways. So it's super helpful. And someone gave really good advice. They said, well, when do you know if you need an assistant? And the answer is, when you ask yourself, do I need an assistant? That's when you know. You don't know, you know, but when that starts going through your brain, just jump on it, because you do need help.
Right. If you're asking, then that means you, like, when you think, do I need an assistant? That's when you need an assistant. And there's this saying, hire slow, fire fast. What are your thoughts on that? Like, how do you know when it's like, okay, sure.
You know, because your sixth sense says this isn't working. And anytime I've ever ignored my sixth sense, it's been a mistake. And every time I listen to it, it is kind of that, you know, Jiminy Cricket on your shoulder. Then there's probably someone 25 years old watching this who does not know who that is. But, you know, your little person on your shoulder saying, it's not working. You need to make a change. And you're so reluctant to do it because you know that that change is fraught with difficulty and, oh, I've got to backfill this and I've got to figure this out. And this means I'm not going to be as leveraged because I'm missing a critical piece. But if the piece isn't working, the faster you fix it, it's like a car, right? You hear the rattle down the street, but you don't do anything. All of a sudden, your carburetor is in the middle of the highway. That's not what you want. So I think you have to listen to your sixth sense and, you know, maybe try to have a nice conversation. And perhaps if that person isn't working, they could stay with you for a little while because you're being honest and you're being transparent, and they might help you get through the time that it takes to find someone else. I mean, that's a big thing with me. Good news, bad news, you name it. I am so transparent because what's the upside of not being transparent, right? I don't know of an upside. You know, I really don't.
Exactly. Well, it's any upside you might convince yourself of, if you walk yourself through the reality of it, you see.
Yeah. No, I think for me, I'm a very quick decision maker. Once I set my mind to something, I am not looking back and I'm executing it. And it doesn't always mean I make the right decisions, but I make decisions and I move forward. And if the path is right, then you just keep moving forward. If there's something that goes astray, you dovetail, you redirect, you take a detour, you get back on path. You know, but if you're not making decisions and keeping things, whether it's a transaction or a relationship, moving forward, you're kind of stuck in this gerbil wheel of
indecision. You know, it's like what you just said. I always say, like, replay, like, everybody replay that, because I found, from being an agent to coaching to like attempting to play tennis, because or probably any sport. I did other sports, but tennis, it was challenging. It's like whatever's happening, you've got to make the decision and go forward.
Yeah.
There's a lot of that. Anytime somebody's stuck or even going backwards, it's a replay. There's something that's stuck on replay.
Right.
Rather than diving in, ripping back whatever the self-deception or outer deception is, ripping back, see, okay, what's the truth? What's the reality? Call the shot, and whatever happens, go forward. Don't replay.
Because you can't go backwards. Even if you say, oh, I regret that, or I made a mistake. Well, you can't go backwards.
You learn from it.
Even if you want to repair it, you have to go forward. So I do tend to make quick decisions, and I just roll with it.
When you make a quick decision, a lot of people, when you think about in your life, how'd you learn that? I think it's more challenging for people than they know. When you're in a situation, especially the way you just owned it, and you just owned, like, look, don't look back, call a shot, right or wrong, and move forward.
You know, it's a great question. My real estate career started when I was really young in commercial real estate in Chicago. I was about 24 years old. And so it was very male dominant. You know, probably 40 to 50 year old men were the big commercial agents, probably still the same today. I don't know. And I was this young woman trying to get my footing. And I happened to have the only female rock star agent in Chicago as my mentor. And she was like, let me tell you something. Don't ever cry. Don't ever show emotion. Don't ever, you know, and I'm a very empathetic, loving person. But in that, you know, in that arena, if I didn't pretty quickly use my brain, make decisions, move forward, I would have been eaten alive in that particular atmosphere. So I think that is where I didn't have a choice. I in my head, I had to succeed. You know, I really love, people say it all the time, it's in my blood. And you kind of roll your eyes if it's not in your blood. But if it is, you don't allow yourself anything but success. You just say, I don't know, it's passion, right? So in that arena with all these people that weren't like me, I had to make quick decisions. And that decision might be, I'm not going to cry because someone's screaming at me right now, right? I mean, that's a decision point. So I think that ability to kind of think quickly and make quick decisions was kind of born of necessity, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
I really, you know, because I'm a people pleaser at heart. I think most good agents are. We want to make everybody happy. And, you know, sometimes making quick decisions and being a people pleaser don't go hand in hand. But I know that my ability to move forward and make decisions, good or bad, right or wrong, live with the consequences of those decisions helps me help my clients. And helps me in life too. But yeah, no one's ever asked me that question, but I really do think it was from kind of being in a place where I didn't have a choice. In my mind, I didn't have a choice. There was no choice to quit. There was no choice to show weakness, you know? So yeah. In that, I learned to be really tough and just kind of plow forward by necessity.
But it's funny because when you're younger, you know, a lot of what we're doing is based on what pleases who.
Yeah.
And as women, we might be, right. So it was such a blessing to be in that environment where you had to dial in at a young age and call the shots or the consequences. And then when you go forward, you know, what were you going to say?
Well, I was going to say, you also learn to say no. And growing up, that was the last word in my vocabulary. But no is really powerful. No, I don't reduce my fees. And this is why. No, I don't have bandwidth to take this on. And this is why. No, I don't have the answer, but I'm going to go get it for you. You know, no can be a very powerful and empowering word. If you can use it with conviction and then, you know, stand behind it.
When did you first learn to say no?
Not until I'm 54 now. Probably not until I was about 40 years old. And I got into this business when I was 48. And I can't tell you, maybe I can tell you, and you'd have to, I think as you get older, you become more confident. You become more confident in who you are and you become more set in your ways, good or bad, but that confidence underpins your value system. And so as you strengthen that value system, I think you get more confident in turning away from the things or the people or the situations that don't support that value system. I.e., I can go on a listing presentation with someone that I've never met. And if the interaction, you know, in the first couple minutes of talking to someone, if you are aligning, you know it. And if you don't know it in 2 minutes, you know it in 10. And if I go on a listing presentation and I can sense that someone is going to be the person who keeps me up at 2 in the morning, I will politely say no. I will say, I appreciate the time. I don't think that we are the right fit for each other. And I don't worry about, am I walking away from business, because we are in an abundant world. I believe in a world of abundance. And so that ability to say no helps me sleep better at night, because we've all been in those situations where, you know, you can have 10 transactions going beautifully and one person who's just on you.
And it affects the 10.
Oh, 100%. That's all you think about is the one. And you can't always step away from that. But if I see it coming my way, I'm going to cut bait before I even get into a place where I'm up at 2 in the morning, because we're just not aligning.
Well, and to what you said, it's funny because I think a lot of people as real estate agents feel like you can just look at a lot of the approaches to win business in this business and how many people fail. Is there seems to be this mindset that it's because there's not enough. But to what you said, this is a very abundant business, as in one person can't do it all. No. So what if we just chose the business we did?
100%. And I found that when I have consciously walked away from something, pretty quickly something fills its spot that maybe couldn't have if I had chosen the path that I was.
And it's usually better.
Yeah, I know. And it's usually better. And you're happier.
It's kind of always better. That's the crazy thing. It's actually going to be better. And back to the abundance point is when we know, and we actually talked about this offline a little bit. We should dial into this too, is that this is a very abundant business. And something that we had said offline is I was talking to you about, like, we were talking about how well you're doing. And you said, look, I have realized who my best clients are and where, what markets I know and where I'm going to do business. And within, I think you said, like, it doesn't go past 20 minutes of talking to someone. If I'm not the best agent for them, they have someone from me who is. And that is what sending out that business or saying no. I want to talk about a moment you've said no just for fun. But that has, like, dialed you in. The deeper I go, the bigger my opportunities, right?
Yep. I agree. And it, and we can talk about this. I'll tell you a recent place where I said no without mentioning any names. But it's not only 20 minutes of knowing someone. I generally don't go more than 15 minutes from my home or my office, and my office and my home are within 5 minutes of minutes of each other, which is really lucky. I will refer out if it's something that's not in my sweet spot, an area that I know like the back of my hand. I don't care if it's 20 minutes away. I will refer it out because I know that there's a better agent who's going to better support my client. And then I'm not running around trying to pretend like I'm someone I'm not, right? Trying to pretend like I have the answers that I don't.
That fake it till you make it advice isn't always the best.
Not in that situation, because there's no way in the in a city like Denver, you know, I focus on the south suburbs, specifically Douglas County. There's no way I can know Ken Carl, Cherry Hills Village, Aurora. I don't know those markets at all. And so if someone calls me right now and says, you know, I found you online, I would love for you to represent me in Cherry Hills Village, I'm going to say, I'm not your person, but let me give you the expert.
Who is?
And they're happy. I'm happy. I get a referral fee, which is great. And then they run off and do what they know like the back of their hands. So then I can do what I know like the back of my hand. And I'm a huge believer in that. I am not a generalist. I'm very specific about what I do.
I've said this a lot lately, but it's just so true. People hire for three reasons, and there's only one reason you want to be hired, and they are being the cheapest, being the least worst, and being the best. And being the best is a great reason to be hired because that's what people enjoy paying for.
Yeah.
And that's jobs that we enjoy doing. And then anybody listening who's going, but wait, I'm new, so what do I do about that? The best advice I ever got on that was know your goal and be specific. And in the meantime, do business to learn.
Yeah.
And I just want to elaborate on that for everybody. So the one thing I've learned and wish I'd known sooner in my business is the agents who have really accelerated and done well quickly were the agents who, they may not word the advice that way, but they took it the way I wish I would have taken it. I took a lot of it and it served me, but in breaking into a market, when you get big opportunities, aligning and partnering with the agents in a way that they are a resource, not someone who you let undermine you, to serve clients in the best way possible.
Yeah. And it's, you know,
and it wins you the business, everybody, by the way.
And your client's happy because you have handed them someone that you trust, who you know is going to be able to tell them where the off markets are and who knows what's coming before it's coming. And so that person is establishing the same kind of value, I think, that I do in my market. And then it opens up time and space for me to focus on what I know. And especially with the, you know, everyone, I don't want to your point, dissuade anyone who's a generalist. There's a million different ways to be successful in this business, right? Different recipes, different personalities, all of it. But with the National Association of Realtors, you know, the recent ruling.
That's a trigger word now. Well, anyway, sorry.
Yeah, we'll see how buyer agency right. goes. But I feel
NAR
like
ruling anyway. Yeah.
We'll see. But I feel like specificity and the ability to say to someone who wants to buy with me or sell with me, there is no one who knows this market better than me. And to say it with confidence and clarity and transparency, I think it's been critical to my growth. And well, I think it's going to be critical to my future.
Yeah. I need to do like a whole like podcast on that lawsuit because I have a lot of thoughts to share that are, I'm really frustrated, frankly, with our industry and how it was handled. Because to your point, we don't even have time to go there.
Yeah.
But when you've got the agent who's really good at what they do, and there's a blog on it, on a blog post, I don't do them often, that I did on the whole lawsuit about it, breakthroughluxury.com. But anyway, when you, there are transactions where people took the advice. I don't know if you saw ABC News, like had advice to be like the national news networks. this, I think they've stopped now, but when it was going on, they were like putting out like how, like, we advise that you get a discount broker. And I'm like, seriously? So I shared one of many stories of a client who had done that route and cost themselves two mortgages, a home that almost sold for a couple hundred thousand dollars less than what, when they luckily missed out on an offer that was their only offer in a year and came to me when the market wasn't in an upward trajectory. And because they had actual representation, got the same price. We didn't drop the price. We put the same price, but we actually paused, approached this correctly as a professional broker who knows what they're doing and to what you just said, actually knows and understands the market. And within 2 weeks had three offers, one and two backups at a price that netted them a few hundred grand more than what they would have. And by the way, what about all the money spent and lost on the upfront discount broker and the year that it took? And I could just, I'll take a deep breath, everybody.
Oh no. I mean, and you know, discount brokerage is pretty rampant right now because we're so supply challenged all over the US that agents.
The irony. And I would just say everybody who's like in this business to win it and be an actual broker and an agent, this is one of the best opportunities in our business ever, because inventory isn't what MLS decided to say, nor what NAR seems to have to say about our commission, quite frankly. Inventory is what is in existence, and your job as a broker isn't to wait for permission, but understand what people want and understand how to create opportunities and make them happen. Yeah. I'll take a deep breath again.
No, but it's to your point, I'm about to be the second agent in on something that was marketed the wrong way, a home that wasn't presented the right way. We are going to go back to market, same thing, the exact same number, but I'm bringing the home back to market in such a better light than where it was with that discount agent that I am certain we will succeed. And, you know, rather than discounting your fee, think about like what's your value proposition to defend your fee, and then come in behind the discount agents and do a lot better job.
Well, you know? Here's what's so ironic. How about, and this isn't to counter you, this is to agree with you. There's nothing to defend. That's what drives me crazy.
Yeah.
There's nothing to defend when what a great broker, which is why it's so important to be good at what you do, nets a client is so much more than whatever the fee is. I love how people have decided they're set fees, when wasn't the lawsuit about set fees? And so now we're talking about set fees again, but wasn't that what we were in trouble for?
Like, yes.
What is it? Anyway, I'll stop there.
But no, I agree. There's so much misinformation out there.
Yeah.
And it's something that's evolving. But the takeaway for me with all the weird, you know, misunderstandings.
It's a huge advantage.
It's a huge advantage to know your market. And for me, that goes far beyond that ruling. It's just been what has underpinned my growth is being
exactly
very specific and being very knowledgeable about what I'm confident in relaying, and then outsourcing to people literally right down the street who have that knowledge base for that market. You know, it's, again, different strokes for different folks. There's different methods for different people. But that, I think, is the one thing that has allowed my growth to happen, you know, fairly quickly. That and the crazy COVID real estate boom. There's that too.
Wasn't that crazy?
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
This whole business is fascinating because we do it, or I did it. I keep talking about being an agent in the present tense, but being an agent, when you experience and see the impact of what being an agent does for a buyer and a seller of a home, and then you see that somehow our industry, and then what people put at risk and how much people can fail at this business, and then somehow we're on the quote unquote, I don't think we're on the losing end, because at the end of the day, what we do is what we do, and it brings such value to people. There's not much that can stop that. And to your point, I think that's been such a catalyst and will be to a success for a lot of really good brokers. That's the good news.
And I think you just hit the nail on the head. What's your value proposition of an agent? As an agent, if you don't know your value proposition, that's the first thing you should do before you create your database and start marketing. You got to figure out, well, why hire me? Why? What's my value proposition? I think to me, that is a critical piece of any growth strategy, is knowing what story are you telling and why is it believable? You know, why do you, why do you as an agent Why are you the one who should be hired? Discount, no discount. Lawsuit, no lawsuit. Like specificity generalist. Why are you the person that any given client should hire? That's kind of the key to.
And the great thing about the lawsuit is it brings up some great conversation starters and great examples of just the difference that a great broker makes. I remember when it first came up, it really got me thinking about, at first I ignored it. I was like, this is ridiculous. Like, this isn't even like, if you really dive into it, if you dive into the practicalities of like how the economy in real estate works, the fact that that lawsuit exists is confusing. It just doesn't even make sense because people agree to what they agree to. And not to get too far into the details, but at least in the aspects of every deal I've ever done, nobody's forced to do anything. It's a free market.
Oh yeah. So, commissions have always been variable.
Yeah.
They always right. have. Like, so
exactly.
That's
so what is this?
Nothing new.
So, and somehow the NAR got wrapped up into this. Like, I can't even, because I have some theories and I'll stop there. Because anyway, I'll stop there. I kind of don't want to, but I will for your sake, Stacey.
No, but really, I think you could have a whole, almost a Q&A session on it, but it's, you know, commissions have always been variable, or you wouldn't have discount agents, right?
In the first place.
Right.
Exactly.
Right.
So, it's like, it just doesn't even add up.
Yeah.
However, really to bring the point home, except to, you know, for me to be hot-headed, or the real point is like, isn't it awesome how problems create opportunities? It's the problems that are it's fun when like, if you think about problems and get frustrated, it's like, but how could you be? Problems are what give us a purpose. Problems are what create the opportunities to bring so much value to one another, and that kind of connect us in the first place. Not kind of, they do.
Yeah. We're having a whole buyer, you know, it's for CE credit at LIV, but we're having a 3-hour buyer kind of refresher, if you will.
Yeah.
I don't know that it's in light of the lawsuit, but just kind of exactly what you're saying, just restating, hey, commissions have always been variable, but let me tell you why I charge what I charge.
Wait, let me tell you more. Where my mind goes, where people start listening, is what they have to lose. Let's talk about what you have to lose. Let's talk about what, and not to threaten people, right? But let's talk about what this really means and how all the parts come together. So everybody, like, if there's this idea of like taking versus building something together. And it's crazy how, and I'm kind of sort of quoting my kind of sort of wannabe boyfriend, kidding. But anyway, I love Elon Musk, but he said it well when I heard him one day. He said, you know, there are people who think of like the economy as taking, like it's like a sum zero game. There's no sum zero game. We're all building something. And as we build something, when we're buying and selling houses, when we're in an economy and we're working together, if we're in that concept of taking, it's interesting how it works. But when we realize what we're building and contributing and how much more comes out of it, just that mindset and understanding alone shows how these problems can be great opportunity builders when we understand and align to them the right way.
Absolutely. And it gets back to, if you have that abundant mindset, and you know how to articulate your value proposition, you're going to be fine no matter what, you know?
You're going to be awesome.
Yeah, right. And those are two things, right? Those are two very simple things. Abundant mindset, articulate your value proposition. You're not going to have to worry about any of this stuff, you know, as you build your business, I think.
Right. And the less afraid we are of problems, the more of them we can find to solve them and be the greatest resource and greatest broker for so many people.
Yeah,
the ones
so
who are
many
our best clients.
People are conflict averse. I am not, because if you handle conflict the right way, it leads to resolution. And you sometimes can't have the resolution without the conflict. So if you don't look at conflict as a negative, but more as, okay, how do I take this situation and solve this problem? You know, more often than not, you get great resolution that makes both sides happy. That's born of that conflict. Conflict for the purpose of just yelling at someone is no good. But conflict for the purpose of actually trying to get to a higher place of understanding, it happens all the time, you know? So I'm a big fan of conflict in a lot of ways. The
right.
right conflict, though, not meaningless, not someone who's just that agent.
That's drama. That's not
right.
Conflict,
Not
right?
that conflict that leads to something better for both parties. That's just kind of day to day getting stuff done, I think, you know, and nothing to shy away from.
I love that, right? It's like leaning into where the problems are. It's leaning in to create the opportunities and solve the problems. It's solving problems and creating opportunities to grow better opportunities and better everything for everybody. Better deals, better houses, transactions closed, avoided lawsuits. We could go on and on, right?
Yes.
That much fun. But you mic dropped it on the last one, just with how you wrap that up. I mean, it's so true. But Stacey, like, we have talked about coming in $94 million in 1 year as an individual agent and how to leverage your business, how to lean into problems and see that they're truly some of our biggest and best opportunities to grow and live our actually most balanced and best life.
Agree.
Thank you. Now, I want to ask you our quick three final questions.
Okay.
Number one is, when you think about your success and everything we've talked about today, what has been your greatest and best resource in that success? If you narrowed it down to just one thing.
That's a great question. What's my best resource in my success? I mean, it sounds like I'm beating a dead horse, but it's just, I am very confident in my knowledge base, right? I'm very confident that I'm going to give you or him or her the best possible support in the arena that I play in. So I think the biggest key to my growth has been specificity and not trying to take on the whole market, but just a very small piece of it. I did, so as just a little bit of math, we have about 2,000 rooftops in my neighborhood. 70% of my business in 2023 came from my neighborhood. So that's 70% of those 2,000 rooftops, whatever transacted.
Yeah.
Then another 20% came from Douglas County, which is the county that I live in. And only 5% was outside of Douglas County. And those were related to things I was doing in Douglas County. As an example, someone was building with me in my neighborhood and they said, I need to sell my Four Seasons condo and I only want you to do it. If I would have outsourced that in a heartbeat or co-listed it. But in this situation, they said, and actually I ended up co-listing, I did end up co-listing it. I did actually end up co-listing it, even though they wanted me to do it by myself. I gave it a shot by myself. I said, you know, this isn't my market. How about I bring someone in who is the downtown expert? And then we had it sold in a month. But basically 95% of what I did last year was in my county and 70% was in my neighborhood, which
wow.
is—
Wow, it all started with your neighborhood.
Yeah, and if you don't have 2,000 rooftops, then to me, you have to figure out that slice of the pie that yields those 2,000 rooftops. Because if you only have 200, the numbers don't work the same.
Exactly. And that's how you determine what market is too big or too small. And usually people go too big.
Yeah.
Right. It's like Brett Dickinson, who's been on the show a few times. He said, he's in La Jolla. He said, the most important thing about being a top agent, breaking price records, dominating markets is realizing that you need to be famous to only a very small and specific group of people.
That's so more succinctly said than anything I've said the whole hour, but it's
I don't know
true.
About that, but it, right. And I had time to think about it after he said it. All right. Number two, when you think about books, what is a book that comes to mind that we just have to read? And it doesn't business, not business, whatever comes to mind that's changed your life.
I mean, ironically, I was an English literature major in college, which means that I was really prepared to do nothing except for teach and maybe go to law school. And I was supposed to go to law school. And then I kind of realized I was going to law school because I felt like it was my only track, right? I wasn't an accountant. I wasn't a pre-med major. I didn't have, it was very amorphous, a very amorphous major. So I've always read fiction. I don't read self-help books. I don't read Outliers. I don't read How to Get Past No. I'm just trying to, name some famous, Malcolm Gladwell type reads.
It's
Because
impressive that you know them, right?
I know them because they're in the
That's pretty
ether,
good
but
because you hear
I
them.
now, yeah, I mean, I pay attention. But for me, I'm a little bit different in that reading is part of that balance. It's an escape for me. It's not a method of trying to do better. I do listen to podcasts, while I'm I love Mel Brown right now. Who doesn't? I mean, if you haven't
I
listened to
don't
her,
know who, okay, so I'm embarrassed, but
oh
who's
my
Mel
gosh.
Brown?
She's probably got one of the most widely listened to podcasts right now, and she's all about science-based productivity, happiness, how to be a better
I'm gonna
person. You
check her
name
out.
it. Yeah, you will
Yes.
love her. So I do listen. I would say right now it's not really reading, but if we're gonna get towards like how do I balance my life, make myself better, create good habits, Mel Brown is who I'm listening to right now.
Nice.
She's amazing and she's real. She talks like a real person. She makes mistakes. She laughs. Like she is so much fun to listen to. And every time I listen to a podcast, I pull out one or two kernels that I'm like, yep, I'm going to do that. I'm going to work that into my
I
day.
love it. I
Yeah.
can't wait
You
to check
will
her.
love
So
her, Jerry. She's awesome.
I can't wait. And to learn about you, right? So part of the message in there is like you got to have your space and your time so you can keep your balance and have your escape. Just you got to tell us what, give us a fiction book that you love.
Oh my gosh. I mean, it's going to sound so cliched, but I read the classics a lot in college, and Catcher in the Rye is my all-time favorite
Oh,
book.
fun.
I wanted to name our dog Scout, and that's a main character in the novel. And I got overruled. Love our dog's name. But like that, there was something about the writing style of, Harper Lee that was so different than everything in that genre. And I don't know. I will always love Catcher in the Rye, but it's a little bit of an outlier novel. I bet not anyone
What's
else
it?
who
What
has
does
that
it mean
question.
to you? Like, what is it? What is it that resonates with it? What do you get from it?
It's the main characters. The main character is so identifiable and yet so different than anyone you've ever encountered. Maybe like Elon Musk, right?
Yeah.
The way that that character is written. For me, I couldn't help but attach to him, and I just loved him, So he's just one of those, just written in a way and a voice, and the things that he would do, you would say, I would not do that, and I wouldn't do it that way, and yet he would do it and get away with it, and it just, yeah, it's the voice and the actions and everything.
He's getting away with all the stuff we wish we could.
Yeah, no kidding.
All right, so last question. If everybody listening forgets everything we talked about today, what's the one thing you hope they'll remember?
You have to, and again, we've talked about this, and we didn't talk
Yeah.
about it as much 2 years ago because I wasn't in balance. But if you're breaking records, breaking your own records, breaking neighborhood records, whatever, at the expense of your health and your happiness and your personal life and your family and your friends, which was where I was when we last spoke. You're not winning, you're losing. And to me, finding the balance in that personal satisfaction and professional success is what it's all about. I'm proud of my production. I would be lying if I wasn't proud of it. But what I'm most proud of is what I was able to do that kind of stood behind everything else that was more important, right? What I love the most is going to Boulder and seeing my girls. They're a sophomore and a senior in college, and I was just there last weekend. And we went out to dinner, and then I got to go to breakfast with Grace. She's kind of my morning child like me. And that less than 24 hours was way more impactful than any transaction I will close this month, last month, next month. Our son is in Chicago. My husband and I met there, had our kids there. So the ability to get on a plane and go spend meaningful time with him, I can't even begin to compare it to production and work because it's just a billion times more valuable. But it took me losing those connections or testing them, maybe not losing them completely, but really testing those connections in a hyper growth period to understand how important it is way beyond anything we're doing in business.
Wow, powerful. Stacy Chadwick, Denver, Colorado, Liv Sotheby's, you were so awesome.
Thank You're you so, so awesome
much for sharing all this.
Yeah, no. And I've had, and when we were together 2 years ago, I did have some people reach out to say, you know, they were inspired, whatever. I will give my time, you know, just to say hi to anyone who, you know, wants to chat. So, and on that note, you know, I'm a big believer in someone like you who really knows how to direct and guide people to their own path, because every path is different. And you have the amazing job of being able to work with different people in different phases of their career, in different production areas, and help guide their way. My way is just one way, you know, of a million. So I think your job is really fun. And
thank you.
I can't believe you told me you have can I say how many clients you have?
Yeah, you can tell them.
120 clients.
Yeah.
Like, that's incredible.
Thank you.
You know, coaching, like brokerage, has a wide range of people and thought processes, but you have to be doing something really right to have so many people who not only want to tune into your podcast, but tune into your one-on-one to help them figure out their path.
Yeah.
So
thank
kudos
you.
Well,
we've
to
got
you.
A group and one-on-one and all kinds of, we've got it set up so all personality types or all mind types can take advantage of it, from the group coaching to the resources to the one-on-ones. But thank you for saying that. And thank you. It's good to see you.
Well, likewise, thank you for having me. I love spending time with you. And we are actually going to spend time in Florida together in the not too distant future. We're going to make that happen.
We better. I can't wait. Thanks for joining us for the Jerry Metcalf Podcast. To get links to our amazing guests, past shows, and more, go to breakthroughluxury.com and click on podcasts, or find us anywhere you can find a podcast. And please subscribe to the show and leave us a 5-star review so that we know that you are getting the most out of what we bring you every week.